answering the question of Maharaj Prakhit as to what is the essence, or rather, what is, how should one spend one's days, especially the days before one leaves this world. He first criticized the materialistic people who have so many topics of hearing, because they have unlimited, materialistic people have unlimited desires for sense enjoyment, and therefore they're interested in anything that will increase their sense enjoyment. But actually, although someone may have so much sense enjoyment, they end up with no happiness, because sense enjoyment and happiness simply do not equate. So Sukadev Goswami Maharaj, he very strongly criticized these and called them griha medis, or those who are envious, householders, who are envious. And therefore, when one is envious, he cannot tolerate seeing that another has anything that he does not have. This is the nature of envy, how it reacts in the heart. So when one has envy in his heart, he can never, ever be happy, because we're bound to see someone who has more than us at something. But yet, even though a devotee or an aspiring devotee may have these tendencies, because when something inappropriate appears in his consciousness, he can take shelter of Krishna. This is actually described by Raghunath Das Goswami. Because we gain spiritual advancement in our life, and these are truly our treasures. They don't come easy. And naturally, when one has treasure, something valuable, then plunderers try to take it from us. So, what do we fear will plunder our spiritual treasures? It is the lust, these very powerful material qualities. So Srila Raghunath Das Goswami compares lust to a highwayman, a dacoit, a robber, a thug, who accosts us in a very powerful way when we are helpless and alone. But immediately, if we call out for help in the name of Govinda, he, Krishna, who has killed the demon named Bakasura, or call out the names loudly, in other words, if one's consciousness focuses even for a few moments on the name of Krishna, Krishna's devotees, then immediately these inauspicious highwayman qualities, they become afraid and turn and flee, and they leave us. So in that sense, because negative qualities, if one is a devotee, aspiring to be a devotee, because those negative qualities attack, they can be a great impetus to taking shelter of Krishna, because otherwise we don't take shelter of Krishna strongly. So even those negative can be turned so positive by Krishna consciousness. But that's not what Sukadev Goswami is criticizing. He's criticizing those who are so envious that they do not spend their days or nights or any part of their day cultivating their eternal spiritual natures. Rather, they're just interested in material enjoyment, material pleasures, and the results are very, very meager. So rather than doing that, he describes that one should be very bold to know that death is stalking him. and act on that, not like an ostrich or a rabbit. Rabbit closes his eyes, and an ostrich, when in danger, puts his head within the sand. No, one should face this fact that, yes, my body will soon die. And one should leave the comforts of material life and leave it and take shelter of Krishna. And what he recommends for such materialistic people who only view the material world as something that they could enjoy, he recommends that they should see how the material world is part of Krishna, the Virata Rupa, how the form of the material world is really can be seen in relationship to Krishna. But then he explains, especially in chapter 2, that better than that first step in God realization is to meditate, to not get involved in sense gratification. Still, that same principle is there. But rather, one should meditate upon the form of the Lord in the heart. Because that form is spiritual. While the Virata Rupa is actually material, it is not actually a form of Krishna himself. It is how the material world is not separate from Krishna, but yet it is not Krishna. Because nothing in existence or non-existence is separate from Krishna. Krishna is the Lord of everything. He alone existed before anything else existed. So everything, because it comes from Krishna, one cannot say it is false. But yet, it is not composed of the same spiritual quality that Krishna's actual form is composed of, rather, the material world, is it? So, although the Virata Rupa is a manifestation of Krishna within the material world, it is not, cannot be considered Krishna, really Krishna, or actually Krishna's form, because Krishna's form is never material, it is spiritual. Anganayasya sakalendriya vrittimanti. So higher than that, which when one meditates upon the Virata Rupa, the tendency is to come to the conclusion of impersonalism, that everything, the Supreme is everything, and not understanding that the Lord is everything, but yet that doesn't limit him. It doesn't mean that he cannot have a spiritual form. So one tends towards impersonalism in that. So better than that is to realize the Lord in the heart and meditate upon him. So that's the subject matter or the pathway that Sukadeva Goswami to get to the essential knowledge that he really and ultimately wants to get to in answer to Sukadeva Goswami's question about what to do at the end of one's life. Should he go and meditate on the Virata Rupa? Should he meditate upon the Lord in the heart? Is that what Sukadeva is telling Maharaj Prigat? No, not actually. So after describing how one should meditate upon the Supersoul, as we were discussing yesterday, he describes the process of yoga by which one can perform the eight limbs of yoga, beginning with yam, or the rules, and then niyam, the regulations, what shouldn't one do, and the asanas, and then the breathing exercises to control the mind, and then when one's mind is controlled, one takes in the pratyahara to withdraw the mind from the external sense objects. Because that's basically what everyone is doing all day long. Their senses are used to get impressions of sense objects and things that they think will make them happy. And then the mind just meditates upon getting those all day long and pushing aside obstacles and discriminating between which set of sense objects they think is preferable to others. So the mind, at some point, through pratyahara, is withdrawn from the sense objects and focuses in dharan, And then dhyan, deep meditation, and finally unflinching meditation, like a lamp in a windless place. The flame does not move. That is samadhi, when one can focus his mind upon the supersoul. And then that beautiful supersoul with his spiritual form was described by Sukadeva Goswami, with his four arms, beautiful hair, beautiful face, beautiful qualities, lotus feet, etc., waist belt, etc. And then the yogi, can meditate upon that super soul, and then, practically speaking, he can achieve the state of labdho pashanti, which we heard about yesterday, which is the state of complete satisfaction. Wherein what happens in that state is that all the elements that are us, the mind, the intelligence, etc., the false ego, they are all, one by one, brought in line with the desire of the supersoul, including the soul, ourselves. They're all brought in line with the supersoul's desires. In other words, one's consciousness is completely purified, and one's desiring is in line with the pleasure of the Lord. Purification on one side, and on the other side, attraction to the pleasure of the Lord, bhakti. So after describing that wonderful state where one is fully transcendental, one is not bothered by anything material in that state. One is not affected by anything lower. No modes, no ignorance, no passion, no goodness. Just one is fully satisfied by virtue of his connection with Krishna. And as the conclusion really of that is that he has placed the lotus feet. A pure devotee who is in absolute harmony with the Lord does not create any perplexities. He's not in it, doesn't have any illusory twists on the philosophy that we are all God or God's body is material. Rather, he worships the lotus feet at every moment. The lotus feet of the Lord at every moment by imbibing them fully with a serving mood within his own heart. And then, two different types of yogis are described. What we heard about yesterday was common to both of them. And this brings us up to text 22, how one, through the practice of yoga, can quit one's body whenever one wants. This is actually one of the yogic perfections that we heard about yesterday. And one also must avoid desiring yogic perfections if one wants to attain the spiritual world through yoga. Siddhis, and they are so attractive to the material mind because they give one power to be able to manipulate and control the material world. So, through the process of yoga and blocking in a mechanical way, raising the life air and virtually raising the soul to the top, the Brahmarandra, Sahasra Shirsha, the thousand petal lotus chakra, the Brahmarandra, then the yogi, through his own power, can leave the world, can burst through there and leave the world. Now, where will he go when he leaves the world? Now, if he has material desires, if he has not attained the stage of labdho pashanti, if he has material desires, and Prabhupada explains it in such a way in his purport, then one can go anywhere within the material world because he has that power, but he must take the coverings around the soul with him. He must take his material mind and he must take his material intelligence and his material force. He must go, the subtle body, the astral body. He must go. He must take that. But he has such facility and power due to his yogic abilities. He can go anywhere within the material world and see anything that he wants to see. He can go to the moon, he can go to the sun. He can travel here, he can visit the heavenly gardens. Like a tourist. A person with a round the world ticket. So he can visit this, he can visit that. So Prabhupada describes that in the purport to 22. Since a materialist is generally inquisitive to experience what is actually in such a planetary systems, he wants to see everything personally. Just like sometimes our friends have gone to Bali or something like that, and they say, "Wow, it's so nice there," or Malaysia or somewhere else, or the United States or Thailand or somewhere. And they, "Oh, it's so nice." And they tell you about it and you see some travel posters. Or Burma or somewhere. Or Moscow. And then naturally one develops the desire to go and visit those places oneself. So the yogis are like that. They hear through the scriptures and through realized people. They hear about the different planets and they want to go and see like a tourist. So as an inquisitive person tours over the world to gain direct local experience. And when I was living in Japan, in Hong Kong many years ago, I used to meet these, they were like these mostly men who just had this travel bug. And they would just travel and travel and travel and travel. And, so, and they'd, when they'd meet at a backpacker's hostel or something like that, they'd say, "How many years have you been traveling?" 2 years straight. 4 years. 7. Wow. I've been just traveling around for so many years. So yogis also can do that, but not for 7 years or 10 years. They can travel for thousands and thousands of years without returning to the earth. But this is less intelligent, actually, because they really can do something wonderful and get out of the material world altogether. So the yogi can, however, easily fulfill his desire by going there to any planet with the present material mind and senses. The prime inclination of the materialistic mind is to lord it over the material world. And all the siddhis that we've heard about, mentioned, are features of domination over the world. Now the devotees, on the other hand, they don't do this. Why? The devotees of the Lord are not ambitious to dominate a false and temporary phenomenon. On the contrary, a devotee wants to be dominated by the supreme dominator, the Lord. A desire to serve the Lord, the supreme dominator, is spiritual or transcendental, and one has to attain this purification of the mind and the senses to get admission into the spiritual kingdom. One has to develop that serving mood. With the materialistic mind, the one that wants to dominate, one can reach the best planet in the universe. Which is that? And which is the best? Which is the best country in the world? And we'll start a war here, right? Am I asking? Everyone will have a different opinion. Yes? Which is it? No. I said in this world. I didn't say in the spiritual world. It is in this world, but not in this world. Oh, okay. With the materialistic mind, one can reach the best planet in the universe, but no one can enter into the kingdom of God. So we have to give up the material mind, and that means the mind that is possessed of that desire to grasp and reject based on its own pleasure, where one's center, self is the center. So the yogis can do that. But then, the transcendentalist yogis, as opposed to the materialistic yogis, they don't go for that, because they see that as a restriction. Because it is a restriction, just like when you're a tourist, you have to carry so much luggage with you. But when you leave that luggage behind, then there is no restriction in where you can go. So similarly, what is the luggage that the materialist must always take with him, and it's always a burden for him? It's that mind. Just imagine leaving the mind home one day and going somewhere. What a relief it would be. The mind, the one who's always, why don't you do this, why don't you do that? No, you shouldn't do that, you shouldn't do that, you should do this. No, you should do this, you should do that. All day long, the mind telling you one thing, then telling you another thing, giving you a bad thought, telling you you're the greatest person that ever existed, then telling you the worst person that ever existed, and speaking in the voice of your mother, then speaking the voice of your father, then speaking in... In other words, wouldn't it be nice to get rid of it? So as long as we're carrying that luggage with us, nowhere can we be happy. So every place is restricted for that reason in the material world, because in the material world we have to have that with us. So therefore the transcendentalists, they want to get rid of that, the material mind. They see it as the greatest burden. So, when the transcendentalist, who doesn't desire to enjoy in this world, decides that he is going to leave his body, this is through yoga, but even he can be a devotee yogi, a bhakti yogi, when he decides to leave the material world, he doesn't stay, he's deciding to get rid of all his baggage. That means he has to get purified of it. So, much of this chapter discusses the process, and it is the process of yoga is very intricate and hard to perform and indirect. And the process of attaining the supreme, the spiritual world by yoga, is similarly like that. It is difficult. First, when one leaves, and there's a process of transference. One will go first to the sun, then to this place, to that place, to the different levels of planets, and in each place the demigods have the business of transferring one. It is very, very tricky and very intricate. So what is described here is first, one goes to the yogi goes to the Vaishvanara Loka, which is the planet of the sun god, or the fire gods. And there, by the process of fire, one is purified. And then after that, that means that one's grosser aspects, one's already left behind his gross body. He's just died and left that behind, and he's traveling in his subtle body. And he has to purify that. So that is the whole process. And this is something that a materialistic person cannot understand, that the process of happiness is a process of purification and becoming more subtle and getting rid of the gross things. And the materialistic person, gross materialist, he's trying to become happy by enjoying the gross things. But actually the gross things in our consciousness, because the things are ultimately enjoyed in the consciousness, even the physical things that we enjoy, the consciousness has to enjoy through the matter. But it's the consciousness that it's enjoying on a gross level. But one, as long as one has gross things, one can't enjoy, actually. One can't be happy. So the process of happiness is a process of purification, even within the material world, even for a materialist. Because one could say, well, the person who's listening to, who has finer tastes in food, who enjoys more, the person who has the finer taste in food or the person who really likes to hog it down, you know, and just go to, you know, McDonald's and things? No, you could say on one, or the dog even. He's enjoying, and the connoisseur of food is enjoying. But can you really compare the levels of enjoyment, even though they're both thinking, yes, this is the greatest? Even the pig who's eating the garbage in the stool, he's thinking, boy, this is the I'm the happiest man in the town tonight. But his enjoyment is gross compared, in eating even, compared to a connoisseur who can discriminate between subtleties in this taste and that taste. So similarly, the more fine and subtle our consciousness becomes, the more we become happy, first peaceful and then happy. And that is the process of going from to the different levels of planets. And in each one, one enjoys on a different level, and one has a different level of purity. Less gross, more subtle. And the more subtle and less gross, then one enjoys more. One is more happy. So at this point, so one goes to the Vaishvanara Loka and gets purified, and he's immediately happy. And then he goes to the Shukshamara, which I think that literally means the dolphin. Yeah, it's the like the Milky Way, of which the central planet is the Dhruvaloka or the pole star, and one can actually have some dealings to some degree with Lord Chiradakshay Vishnu, who stays there. And but he's on his way out of the universe, and each stage he has to get more pure and more pure and more subtle and more subtle. He's getting rid of all the baggage, the different subtle desires like that, and getting more and more pure. So on the, for example, on the level of the Shushumara lokas, the past the Shushumara, there is the Maharloka, which is a planet where the great sages live, and they live for 4,300,000,000 years. And there is so much happiness there. And he's past Indraloka. At Indraloka, there's so much happiness compared to here. So we hear about the higher planetary systems, and we think that like here, maybe someone likes to listen to CDs or something like that, and rock and roll music on CDs. So on, they're thinking like on Indraloka they must have more CDs and better CD players and more little discs. But it's not like that at all. Everything is more subtle. And the happiness, because the happiness is more subtle. So one comes to the Maharloka where there's such happiness that it's incredible and incomparable. Practically no one can experience such happiness here. And this is on the material level. And then finally, in the material world, one can reach the topmost planet of the material world, which is called Satyaloka or Brahmaloka, which is the planet of Lord Brahma. And one lives for on that planet for almost 16 trillion years. And the existence is so fine. There's not a trace of anxiety in that existence. Not even a trace. And it's so finer and more subtle and more wonderful than even Indraloka or Maharloka. So one can understand how it's very easy to get enamored by these things. But they are not the spiritual world. And more pure, because the soul is still more subtler than the subtlest matter. And to get into the highest part of the spiritual world, Goloka Vrindavan, something completely different is needed. Not this kind of subtleness, but spiritual energy, the serving energy of Krishna, and the Ladini, the Krishna's internal potency is needed, and one has to connect with that. But in any case, in Satyaloka, there is no pain of any kind, there is no anxieties, except there's one kind of anxiety. And that is, sometimes, due to consciousness, there's a feeling of compassion for those unaware of the process of devotional service, those who are subjected to insurpassable miseries in the material world. They have the ability to perceive how miserable us type of folks here down in the lower regions, and the kind of how we struggle and struggle and struggle and yet to suffer and suffer and suffer, and they feel sorry for us, and that causes them some type of a misery, compassion. But other than that, there is no misery there. There's no experience of pain except that. But still, at that point, one can have, as described, this is the yogic process again. The yogic devotee is specifically able to incorporate, his subtle body becomes similar to that of the gross body in that he has a form. So he lives in such a subtle form. And he gradually attains more and more subtle existences, one after another. He starts leaving the universe. Because that's his desire. He doesn't want to stay. Remember this, he doesn't want to stay anywhere in the material world. He wants a different level of existence. So even he doesn't want to stay in this Satyaloka, Brahmaloka. And he goes through the subtle material, the universe has different coverings, Prabhupada explains this in the purport. And he leaves all these subtle elements behind, the one after another. Earth, water, fire, glowing, ether, until he reaches the ethereal or ether stage. And then, so he's giving up all the gross elements, so he has nothing to do with anything like this. He's passed through yoga, passed the Brahmaloka, and then he gives up the sense objects, the subtle sense objects, and then the false ego he gives up, and then he merges, he gives up, because basically what he's doing, there's the process of creation of the material world, and he's reversing the process of creation. The process of creation is where coverings are put on the soul, and he's reversing that, so he's giving up all the different coverings. So in the process of creation, the first thing that is created is there's false ego in the three modes of material nature, goodness, passion, and ignorance. And from false ego in the mode of goodness comes the mind. From false ego in the mode of ignorance comes the subtle senses, the working senses. And then from false ego in the mode of passion comes the knowledge acquiring senses. And the gross senses come from false ego. The gross material elements come from false ego and the mode of ignorance too. So one by one, he merges all these things back. All the different false egos, all the different products of the false ego and the different modes of material nature. And then he reaches egoism and goodness. He's just throwing off things. Because ultimately he knows that he's the soul, he's not these things. And after this, he reaches the level of the Mahatattva, the primal ingredient, and this is the point of pure self-realization. But it is not, he's not in his constitutional position yet. Now, all this is achieved, this getting out of the material world can be achieved in a much simpler way. And in the Prabhupada's purport to text 30, he explains how the soul who is taken to Krishna consciousness following the path chalked out by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, how he leaves the material world. And it is basically what Lord Chaitanya's teachings to Srila Rupa Goswami, which are described in Chaitanya Charitamrita, where he describes Brahmanda Brahmate Konya Bhagavan Jeev Guru Krishna Prasade Pai Bhakti Lata Bij, how one then Ihan Mali Nitya Sechi Shravanadi Jal, the seed of devotion is planted, and then by watering it, sprinkling it with the water of hearing and chanting, the seed of devotion of the soul will grow. And then, as Prabhupada describes in the purport, one has to protect the seed from the upasaka gun. Nitya siddhachar kuti nati kuti nati labha puja pratishtari yata upasaka gun. These are the, what's the first one?
Nisidacha.
Behavior not befitting one who on the spiritual path. So these are the weeds that choke the seed of devotion from growing out throughout the universe. So they have to be cared for. The offenses have to be avoided. And the water of hearing and chanting has to be sown on the soul has to be surrounded by that, saturated with that really, and then the seed of devotion will fructify, grow out throughout the entire material world and actually follow the same process in one sense, but in a direct and much simpler way. Now, in text 31, more or less concluding this section, Sukadeva Goswami says, only a purified soul, purified means one who has no contaminations, can attain the perfection of associating with the personality of Godhead. Because by this process, the soul leaves the material world and goes to Vaikuntha. And there, in associating with the Lord in complete bliss and satisfaction in his own constitutional state, whoever is able to renovate such devotional perfection is never again attracted by this material world, and he never returns. In the same way, using a gross example, a food connoisseur, you never see him at McDonald's, because that was, he couldn't even think of eating such hard, even considering that stuff food. So similarly, a devotee, an actual devotee who is purified, he would not even dream of engaging in sense enjoyment, which is gross and is simply the cause of misery, because he's already purified. And therefore he never returns to the material world, because he's never attracted to the material world. He's attained the stage of perfection. A pure devotee has no contaminations. Now, the final part of this chapter, 32 through 37, is actually what Sukadeva Goswami wants to tell Maharaj Prickett. All this explanation has been to tell him what he shouldn't do, really, and what no one really should do, although this is part of the Vedic culture, these gradual processes. Here is what he really wants to tell him. Your Majesty, Maharaj Prickett, know that all that I have described in reply to your proper inquiry of what should I do is just according to the version of the Vedas and is eternally true. This was described personally by Lord Krishna to Brahma, with whom the Lord was satisfied upon being properly worshipped. There's nothing wrong with it. This is all true, but it is not exactly to the point. For those who are wandering in the material universe, from body to body, there is no more auspicious means of deliverance than what is aimed at in the direct devotional service of Lord Krishna. So there are different processes of self-realization described in the Vedas. In the Vedic system, there is the process of karma, the process of jnana, knowledge, activity, then knowledge, and then yoga. But none of those, what they are is steps leading to bhakti, which is the topmost rung of the yoga ladder. So Sukadev says that the most auspicious, the best method of getting out of the material world is that which is aimed at the direct devotional service of Lord Sri Krishna. That's going right for the top. It's hitting the nail on the head. It's shooting the arrow right into the bullseye. It's taking the elevator to the topmost floor immediately without taking the steps and browsing on one floor, then the next floor, and the next floor. The great personality Brahma, with great attention and concentration of the mind, studied the Vedas 3 times. And after scrutinizingly examining them, he ascertained what is the conclusion of studying all the Vedic literature. That the conclusion that he ascertained was that attraction for the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, is the highest perfection of religion. That is the conclusion. That somehow or another, become attracted to Krishna. That is the goal of the whole system. That is the goal of the sacrifices in Karmakanda. That is the goal of the austerities and the meditations on the Virata Rupa in Jnanakanda. And the viewing the material world, that is the goal of all the yoga processes, to gain attraction for Krishna. Because it is Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, He is in every living being along with the individual soul. It is Krishna. Bhagavan Savabhuteshu Lakshita Svatmana Hari. Along with the soul is Hari. Krishna is there with everyone. And this fact is perceived and hypothesized in our acts of seeing and taking help from the intelligence. Now, in other words, that Krishna is there in everyone's heart, and the whole purpose of our existence is to awaken our relationship with Him and gain that attraction for Him, and through that attraction, which is bhakti, devotion, serve Him with great love, and therefore go to His place, Goloka Vrindavan. That is the purpose. So this is the conclusion of Shastra. But also, Sukadev Goswami is here in saying that the fact that Krishna is there can be perceived not only through Shastra. So studying the Vedas like Brahma did for three times, which we can't even study the Vedas like that. But also through our own intelligence we can perceive this. And Prabhupada, in his purport, which is somewhat technical, describes how he can be understood through using the intellectual processes. One can understand that Krishna is in everyone's heart, and we are completely dependent on Him, therefore we should serve Him. Now, this is the matter for at least one class in and of itself, this purport, and how one through one's intelligence can understand this. So we're not going to go over it right now, but I've made a simple summary of it. And I'm going to give this to... would you take it? And then if anyone would like a copy of this summary and they could read it. Huh? There he is. There's the okay, Scott. So if anyone wants a copy of that, go see Scott. So one can understand that Krishna is through one's intelligence. Therefore, now these are the last two verses, and this is what Sukadeva Goswami wants to tell Maharaj Prickett, because he's asked him, what should I do at the end of my life? Now that my life is ending, what should I do? And here is what he's saying. I'm going to read these two verses and then we'll read some of the purports. O King, it is therefore essential that every human being hear about, glorify, and remember the Supreme Lord, the Personality of Godhead, always and everywhere. It is essential, because he's asking, what should I do? My life is, what is the essence of all instructions? I don't have the time to go through long processes. I don't have the time to read everything and find out and come to the conclusion, what is the essence? And here, therefore, the essence. It is essential for every human being that he hear about and glorify and remember the Supreme Lord, the Personality of Godhead. When? Always. Where? Everywhere. Tasmat savatmana rajan hari savatra savada sotavya kirtitavyas chas matavyas bhagavan rinam, which is basically the same thing that he said right in the beginning of this canto. This is practically the first thing that Sukadeva said in text 5. Tasmat bharata savatma Bhagavan Ishwaro Hari Shotavya Kirtitavyas Chas Matavyas Chetitavyam. If you want to become free from fear, if that is your desire, then you should always hear about, glorify, and remember the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He is the savior from all miseries. He is Hari. He takes away all misery. And then in 37, the final verse of this chapter, he says, those who drink through oral reception, through their ears, fully filled with the nectarian message of Lord Krishna, the beloved of the devotees, purify the polluted aim of life known as material enjoyment, and thus go back to Godhead, to the lotus feet of Him, the Personality of Godhead. So that's the result. And this is what Sukadeva Goswami is telling Maharaj Prickett. They should always, in all places, hear about, glorify, and remember Krishna. And those who hear about Him, who drink this nectarian message, this Krishna Katha, they become purified without going through all the processes of yoga, without performing the austerities of renunciation in that way. But they become purified of all tendencies of material enjoyment. And what is the ultimate result? They go to the lotus feet of Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, to serve Him forever. Here is Prabhupada's purport. Srila Sukadeva Goswami, this is the text 36, begins this verse with the word tasmad, or therefore. That means the conclusion. Here is the conclusion. Tasmad, therefore. Because in the previous verse, he's already explained that there is no auspicious means for salvation other than the sublime process of bhakti yoga. The bhakti yoga process is practiced by the devotees in different methods, like hearing, chanting, remembering, serving the lotus feet of the Lord, worshipping, praying, rendering service and love, becoming friendly, and offering all that one may possess. All nine methods are bona fide methods, and either of them, or some of them, or even one of them, can bring about the desired result for the sincere devotee. But out of all the nine different methods, the first one, namely hearing, is the most important function in the process of bhakti yoga. Without hearing sufficiently and properly, No one can make any process, any progress by any of the methods of practice. And for hearing only, all the Vedic literatures are there, compiled by authorized persons like Vyasadeva, who is the powerful incarnation of Godhead. And since it has been ascertained that the Lord is the Supersoul of everything, He should therefore be heard and glorified everywhere and always. That is the special duty of the human being. When the human being gives up the process of hearing about the all-pervading personality of Godhead, he becomes the victim of hearing rubbish transmitted by man-made machines. Machinery is not bad, because through the machine one can take advantage about hearing about the Lord. What types of machines is Prabhupada talking about? Everything from the gramophone to the
dictating machine.
To dictating, to anything. To the digital whatevers. So we can hear about the Lord through these machines, but because machinery is used for an ulterior purpose, it is creating rapid degradation in the standard of human civilization. In other words, people are hearing about so many other rubbish things. It is said here that it is incumbent upon the human beings to hear, because the scriptures like Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam are made for that purpose. Living beings other than human beings have no ability to hear Vedic literature. If human society gives itself to the process of hearing the Vedic literature, it will not become a victim to the impious sounds vibrated by impious men who degrade the standards of the total society. Hearing is solidified by the process of chanting. One who has perfectly heard from the perfect source becomes convinced about the all-pervading personality of Godhead, and thus become enthusiastic in glorifying the Lord. All the great acharyas like Ramanujacharya, Madhvacharya, Chaitanya, Saraswati Thakur, or even in other countries, Muhammad, Christ and others, have all extensively glorified the Lord by chanting always and in every place. Because the Lord is all-pervading, it is essential to glorify Him always and everywhere. In the process of glorifying the Lord, there is to be no restriction of time and place, space. This is called Sanatan Dharma or Bhagavat Dharma. Sanatan means eternal, always and everywhere. Bhagavata means pertaining to Bhagavan, the Lord. The Lord is the master of all time and space, and therefore the Lord's holy name must be heard, glorified, and remembered everywhere in the world. That will bring about the desired peace and prosperity so eagerly awaited by the people of the world. The word cha in this verse includes all the remaining processes or methods of bhakti yoga as mentioned above. And then in the last purport in this chapter, the sufferings of human society are due to a polluted aim of life, namely lording it over the material resources. The more human society engages in the exploitation of undeveloped material resources for sense gratification, the more it will be entrapped by the illusory material energy of the Lord, and thus the distress of the world will be intensified instead of diminished. The human necessities of life are fully supplied by the Lord in the shape of food grains, milk, fruit, wood, stones, sugar, silk, jewels, cotton, salt, water, vegetables, etc., in sufficient quantity to feed and care for the human race of the world, as well as the living beings on each and every planet within the universe. The supply source is complete, and only a little energy by the human being is required to get his necessities into the proper channel. There is no need of machines or tools or huge steel plants for artificially creating comforts of life. Life is never made comfortable by artificial needs, but by plain living and high thinking. The highest perfectional thinking for human society is suggested here by Sukadeva Goswami, namely sufficiently hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. For men in this age of Kali, when they have lost the perfect vision of life, this Srimad Bhagavatam is the torchlight by which to see the real path. Srila Jiva Goswami Prabhupada has commented on this, on the Katam Ritam mentioned in this verse, and has indicated Srimad Bhagavatam to be the nectarian message of the personality of Godhead. By sufficient hearing of Srimad Bhagavatam, the polluted aim of life, namely lording it over matter, will subside, and the people in general, in all parts of the world, will be able to live a peaceful life of knowledge and bliss. For a pure devotee of the Lord, any topics in relation with His name, fame, quality, entourage, etc., are all pleasing. And because such topics have been approved by great devotees like Narada, Hanuman, Nanda Maharaj, and other inhabitants of Vrindavan, certainly such messages are transcendental and pleasing to the heart and soul. Bhavo shadi shutamanam baramat. And by the constant hearing of the messages of Bhagavad Gita and later of Srimad Bhagavatam, one is assured herein by Srila Sukadeva Goswami that he will reach the personality of Godhead and render him transcendental loving service in the spiritual planet named Goloka Vrindavan, which resembles a huge lotus flower. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. That is the answer to the question that Maharaj Prickett asked in the previous canto at the end. What is the duty of everyone in all circumstances, especially one who is about to die? He should hear about Krishna and thereby purify himself and go back to that wonderful place, Goloka Vrindavan, which is shaped like a huge lotus flower. Okay, are there any questions or comments? Yeah, Krishna Leela.
Can go
does one go straight to Goloka Vrindavan, or does he have to? Yeah, it said that one has to get further training by going to some universe where Krishna is performing his pastimes, and there he will associate with the associates of Krishna, the eternal associates of Krishna, and get further training in the material world. But it will be wonderful because Krishna will be there, and all those personalities will be there. So it's not really the material world. It's not the material world, but it's within the material world. But it's not the material world.
You see, the process of happiness is one of progressive purification. So, it's part of the happiness, that's material happiness. So
material, spiritual.
So, okay, but material is part of the happiness, like an ingredient in that happiness, the fact of being superior.
Superior?
Yeah, being on a higher level, like a more refined platform.
Yeah. But it's not pride that might be associated with being superior. There's no pride in it. Because the higher souls, people who are pure, are humble. They possess so much, but yet they're humble. Because they see what they have in relationship to what is. Is that clear? That's described. We read about that. Krunaya Kopina Kanta Srito Takvatonam Mashesha Mandalapati Srinim Saratutsrava. They gave up all association of aristocracy as insignificant Bhutva Dina Ganesha Ko Karunaya, out of their mercy, they Kopina Kanta Srito, they adopted loincloths. They didn't need it for their purification, but to set the example, and so that no one would become envious of them possibly, they did this. They set the example how it's possible to live in the highest happiness, taking nothing, more or less nothing, from the material world whatsoever. To teach us, and Maharaj Rishabdev did that too, to show us that one can be completely happy on the soul level while taking nothing from the material world. But the Goswamis, they were enriched and immersed. Gopi Bhava. They had love of Krishna, the mood of serving Krishna, the mood of the gopis. This was the treasure of their life that they were living on. Which allowed them to renounce material things as insignificant. But they were, like Prabhupada gave the example of Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, and Gokishore Das Babaji, of both being akinchana devotees, possessing nothing in the material world. One had a big palace, as Prabhupada said, Bhagbazarmat, and the other lived practically with nothing, like one of the Goswamis of Vrindavan. But both of them were on the platform of not trying to squeeze any pleasure from any material possession. Rather, their pleasure came from having a grand and fully developed serving mood towards Radha and Krishna. And without trying for pleasure, by having that, they were always happy, always in ecstasy. Anyone want to? Is that alright? Anyone want to add anything to that?
About even Prabhupada himself, he had all the appearances at his command.
Yeah.
He wasn't involved in any of them.
Yeah.
It's a natural result of that level of consciousness where eating, sleeping, all the things that you said are austerities, they just fall off. They are insignificant. They just lose any meaning. Not that they left it by purpose or something, even though it has been said that they left on purpose to teach us some lesson. But the fact is that they just fall away. They just have no meanings left.
Tutsavad.
Yeah, they have no meanings. They just fall away by themselves, you know, on that level. So they live in samadhi. All the time they are in samadhi, such personalities. They don't live on our level, you see. It might appear they are living like this, but no, they are not. So all the other things, eating, sleeping, this, making, whatever, pleasures that we think seem to be comforts and pleasures of life, they have no meaning, they just, you know, fall away. So the Goswamis were on that level, you see, they all these things just fall away. All the big Maharajas of Jaipur and others were their servants, you know, and they built such big temples in Vrindavan. We have seen all the temples we have all of us seen, and they have nothing, coping kind. And still, millions of rupees in those days you might have spent in building seven-story structures, you know, in Vrindavan itself. And all those royal and big people were sort of at their command.
A dollar is a lot, but one's a billionaire. Insignificant. So the Goswamis were trillionaires. Prabhupada was a trillionaire. And we can also become wealthy like that. It's actually the word in the translation of the Sad Goswami Astak. They were enriched. Gopi Bhava Primam Ritam Dalahari. Yeah? Is that right? Kalola Magno Mohor. They were enriched with the treasure of love for Krishna and the mood of the gopis. And they were swimming and diving in the ocean of that love. Hare Krishna.